If you play sports games in 2014, you need Operation Sports. Whether you're knee-deep in an online league, building your offline player career, living the ultimate team life, or simply enjoying one-off games against your friends, Operation Sports will help you get everything possible out of your favorite sports game. The legendary forums at Operation Sports go deep on every topic imaginable, for not just the latest games on the newest platforms, but also some of your favorite ones from years past. You name it, they've got it. Gameplay tips, roster analysis, sliders, critical analysis, wish lists, and terrific places to meet other like-minded sports gamers to form game-specific leagues and communities. Madden, NBA 2K, UFC, MLB The Show, NHL, NCAA, NBA Live, WWE, Forza, Gran Turismo, and more. Of course, that's not all. Operation Sports keeps you up to date with the latest news from around the sports gaming world, along with in-depth reviews, previews, press releases, and opinion. Each community member can also create their own arena where you, too, can blog about anything sports or sports game related to your heart's content. Operation Sports also produces great audio content, including the Dual Threat podcast, as well as the Press Row podcast, the definitive sports game show. 2014 is going to be another groundbreaking year for sports game. Be sure to make Operation Sports the center of it all. Operation Sports, dedicated to sports game.
Hello, this is the Press Row Podcast with my daddy.
Welcome to the Press Row Podcast, brought to you by Operation Sports. I'm your host, Richard Christian. Well, all right, we are here with Peter Garson, the executive producer of The Golf Club, a brand new game coming from HB Studios. In evidently, at least today, frigid Canada. Mr. Garson, thank you so much for joining us on the Press Row Podcast.
Oh, thanks for having me here. It's definitely very wintry here today.
Yeah, well, I've been spending quite a bit of my morning shoveling as well, so hopefully spring will be coming soon.
Yeah, we can hope, yeah.
So you are the executive producer of The Golf Club, a brand new golf franchise, and the first version or the launch version of the game will be coming out this spring. So before we get into that, I want to start with your background. What's your background in video games, and what's sort of your path been to becoming the executive producer of this new game from HB Studios?
Well, I started out, I mean, I've been making games and been involved in programming and that kind of stuff since I was really a pretty little kid, you know, dating myself here, but like before the internet kind of thing.
Sure.
So, you know, I was, before then I used to, you know, run a BBS out of my house and I used to write online games, in my spare time kind of thing for my BBS for people to play. And I think one of the first ones I ever made was like a one-on-one hockey game with happy faces and ANSI graphics and stuff like that. So, I mean, I've been, you know, making games pretty much, you know, most of my life. And, yeah, so when I finished school, which I have a degree in writing and a master's degree in communication. So it's not a programming background at all, but I started as a programmer here. So, so I was doing programming for, play-by-play commentary and audio and that kind of thing for, we were at the time doing EA Sports Rugby and EA Sports Cricket. So that's sort of the studio here. We started out doing those sort of more niche European sports of rugby and cricket. And so, yeah, I was doing audio programming. And then, you know, I've also been a musician for most of my life as well. So I moved over as a small company here to head up and start the audio department here. So I was actually audio director here for a lot of years and we worked on many, many EA Sports titles. And then gradually over time, I started moving into production. We did a couple of music titles, and so that was sort of a natural fit there. And then as time went on, I was sort of looking for a new challenge. And so, you know, over the last probably about 3 years ago now, I switched over into production and was heading up our production and design departments here. So that's my sort of long, circuitous route to being executive producer here. But, and so, yeah, so that generally means that I oversee the sort of creative on all the projects that we do here, and look after those things.
So everyone that is on the Press Row podcast, you know, our regular panelists, as well as pretty much everybody that I have spoken to that likes sports games, is extremely excited for the golf club. As we've talked about on the show for years, and as pretty much everybody who is a fan of sports games know, there has been a shrinking landscape of sports games. And in fact, you know, the only real simulation sports game on the market, Tiger Woods, it's taking at least a year off and is, you know, being rebranded. It's not even Tiger Woods. So when the announcement of the golf club came out, it was definitely met with a lot of excitement and interest. And were you surprised by the initial reaction to the announcement?
I think we were. I think we were, you know, pleasantly surprised that everybody took such a big interest in the game. And I think maybe we were also surprised that people were surprised that there was a, you know, that they seemed genuinely really excited about it. And so, I mean, that's great for us. And we've just been sort of, you know, trying to engage with people as much as possible, because for a long time we've been a, you know, sort of third party developer. We've been working with publishers and stuff. And so people don't tend to know us and know the things that we worked on. So for us, it's a great opportunity for us to engage directly with the community and the people who play our games. And so we've sort of, as people have been showing interest, you know, sort of really take that on to work towards building, you know, a longer term relationship with those people.
So are you publishing this game as well as developing it?
Right now, that's not completely decided.
Okay.
There are still, you know, discussions going on, but we're not sort of opposed to self-publishing the game if it turns out that way. So there's still some things that are, you know, being discussed behind the scenes, and
sure,
you know, a couple of moving parts as well about whether we you know, want this game to come out on a disc versus purely digital, all that kind of thing. So still to be figured out. But yeah, that's something, regardless though of if we were working with a publisher, it's something where we, you know, it's a franchise and a brand that we believe in, and we want to engage directly with the people who are playing it, and that's really important to us.
You know, you bring up something that's fascinating and really just never even discussed among sports game fans. But I mean, you talk about the decision whether to publish it yourself and or whether to work with a publisher, with which both of those choices bring positives and negatives, or pros and cons, as well as, you know, the question about releasing it on a disc as well as digitally, just digitally. I mean, it's a relatively new landscape where you could theoretically get to a lot of your potential audience if you go digital only, right? I mean, because of the PlayStation 4 and the Xbox One and the PC, which, as I very poorly as a host did not mention, yes, the golf club is coming for the PS4, the Xbox One, and the PC. So just the new digital landscape of those platforms, obviously it gives you more options, but there's not a whole lot of blueprints out there for what you're doing either. So I would imagine there's a lot of excitement, but a lot of uncertainty. A lot of interesting dynamics, as you mentioned, sort of going on with how to get this game into the most people's hands possible.
Exactly. And sports is like kind of a little bit of a strange landscape compared to other genres, where it is almost wholly dominated by very big players, largely because of the licensing involvement. And so that's something that we've talked about a lot here as a smaller sports developer. And, you know, we still do a lot of work with EA. We have a great relationship with those guys. And yeah, but we've, you know, over time have started to think about, you know, how can we as a smaller player get into this space and make it something that we can not just compete in, but that's sustainable for us. And so we've, you know, talked a lot about how can we in some ways reinvent and reimagine sports games and these franchises, and for a way that makes sense as a smaller developer to build, and what are the opportunities there for us as a smaller developer to get involved with. And so that's something that, you know, the golf club is sort of the leading edge of this thing, but it's definitely something we're thinking about in other spaces as well. So it's definitely, it is exciting because now you do have the opportunity to reach people directly, and that's definitely something that's interesting to us.
Well, as somebody who spends a lot of their time talking about playing and thinking about sports games, just hearing you say that is extremely exciting, because not only is the sports landscape dominated by major players, but there's also, as we mentioned, a shrinking number of games. And there is definitely a market, I believe, for more than is currently available, especially when, as you mentioned, there are new things, new ways to play the game that are both powered by the technology as well as just, you know, sort of the freedom of creativity with the new technology as well. So that's exciting.
Yeah, I think that there are a lot of things that are now possible, or at least they might have been possible before, but they might have been more difficult or more just too expensive to be feasible on certain scales of title. And now these things are more, for lack of a better word, kind of commoditized. And so they become fairly cheap to implement. So a lot of online features, a lot of user sharing features, all that kind of stuff is sort of, now that there's, you know, pay-per-use, off-the-shelf cloud computing pretty much for everybody, that makes things like user-generated content a reality for smaller developers, whereas 5 years ago it was pretty much not possible because the cost would have, and infrastructure and development costs would have been too high. Whereas now that's feasible for small people to do. Same with the same way, you know, self-publishing is the same way. All this kind of stuff is just becoming easier. And the same thing with better hardware on the consoles. You can do things and compete in an easier manner because you're not having to wring every last ounce of performance out of these boxes because you kind of have a bit of headroom.
Okay, so, but let's talk a little bit more about the golf club. First of all, why golf? Why is the golf genre your first foray into this arena?
Well, I think there's a number of reasons there. One of them being that we actually did have a team built to start working on golf with EA last year, but that whole sort of situation fell through, and so we were sitting around and we had this team who is spare, and there's a bunch of guys on there who are sort of huge golf nuts, and we're, you know, we had a lot of ideas as well that we felt were pretty innovative and were sort of pushing the boundaries and maybe were things that we wouldn't have been able to do in the confines of a yearly franchise. So what we did was we said, well, let's do it. Let's, you know, try it on our own and see if it works out. And so, you know, one of the biggest things obviously was the course creator. And so, you know, we quickly set to work to try to prototype that, and pretty quickly we had the basics of the generator to create a basic course layout. It didn't have all the details and the editing capabilities it does now, but it had the core of something there, and we had a really basic game that you could play with, you know, no animation and all this kind of stuff. But we were playing it, and it was fun, and people around the studio were playing it, and we saw the potential there. And so, you know, it just continued to gain momentum, and here we are, you know, almost a year later with a game that's ready to go.
And so I guess, what was the tipping point when you decided, and what were the factors going into saying, all right, we are doing it, we are making a game, we are making it on the PS4, the Xbox One, and the PC, and we're doing it, it's coming out in the spring of 2014. I mean, I'm sure that could be its own conversation. It's for an hour. But I mean, what sort of put all of that together to make this game at this time on these platforms?
Well, I think that we, when we had the spare team, we did say let's do this. Let's make a title, and let's make one that pushes the boundaries a little bit. So that sort of helped us make the choice of platform. We knew, okay, well, we needed to target, you know, the next gen consoles and PC, and let's focus on that. Let's try to make the best golf game and kind of reimagine this. You know, if we wanted to play a golf game, what would it be? What were the features that we'd absolutely have to have? And just set to it. Of course, we knew, you know, we might prototype the course creator, which was really the sort of core feature, and it might not work at all, or it might prove to be, you know, too big in scope for us to do within a reasonable time frame. But once the, you know, after that sort of two-month-long prototyping period went through, we had something that was very playable, and definitely you could tell there was a kernel of something there that this could be really something special. And at that point there was sort of, we knew that we were going to ship the game, and we knew.
Nice.
And it came together pretty, you know, after that it really started just come together and, you know, build off that initial core. And probably by the end of the summer, we had, you know, exceeded even what we thought was possible to do. And that's, you know, huge credit to the guys on the team who pulled that off, because, we had even exceeded the bar that we'd set for ourselves in terms of features that we wanted to include, especially around the course editing aspect.
And you're a small studio, right? And you have limited resources, and you don't have, I would imagine, I'm making an assumption, but you don't have, you might not have a direct number to the CEOs of Sony or Microsoft. I mean, were you able to get the dev kits for these new consoles and the resources that you needed in a good amount of time?
Yeah, I mean, the one thing is that we've been around for a long time, so we, you know, we definitely do have relationships at those companies. And to be fair, I mean, those guys have all been awesome. They've been really, really. There's been definitely, like, a bit of a sea change in their attitude in terms of how they deal with developers and the way the whole ecosystem works. And so they've actually been really, really helpful, really accommodating, and they want people to make really great content for those systems. Hmm. So we actually haven't had any problems getting access to kits, that kind of stuff, and they've been really supportive all along. So, we've been really, really happy with that.
Awesome. So, what is the golf club? It is many things. It is also not many things. But let's just, you know, let's start off, not start, but what is the golf club, sort of boiled down at its core?
Well, at its core, it is a golf sim. It's a realistic golfing simulation game. But it also has a really deep user-generated and social component that's kind of not present in other titles. It's not focused around emulation of real-world broadcasts or tournaments or licensed golfers. It's focused on the sport of golf, but also on the courses and creation, and then also competition amongst your friends. So those were the kind of really core things that drove the experience that we were building. And we tried to stay pretty close to those, because it's really tempting. We've made, I don't know how many, 40 or more games here, and you kind of get into, you know, the habit of saying, okay, well, like, a simulation sports game needs to be like this. And, you know, we kind of had to break our own habits and say, okay, but it doesn't have to be, because we're, you know, in control of our own destiny here. So if we want it to be like this, it can be like this. You know, if we don't want to have, licensed whatever, we don't have to have that. We can build it out in other ways. If we don't want to have broadcast-style commentary, we don't have to. We can do something different. Let's try things that we think are different. We don't want to have a power meter in the game. We don't have to have a power meter. So these are things that I think we had the sort of freedom to explore, and things that we were excited to try. And this is sort of going back to right here, one of the things we're trying to do is every time we're approaching these games where we have the opportunity to, you know, have a bit more freedom, is to try to innovate and just reimagine what could a simulation sports title be like on console and PC.
You know, it's funny you mention it, how when you've been doing something, whether you're a video game developer or a insurance company or whatever, right? When you've been doing a certain kind of thing for a long time, you just sort of get into the mode of thinking, okay, this is how we do it. And making those changes, it's not just like one point in time, you're like, all right, we're going to do something different. It's a regular, you have to have somebody, and I imagine you're one of those somebodies who is constantly reminding the team, well, you can think differently. You can do something like this. You don't have to do it that way. What has that progression looked like, and what are a couple of the things that have been a direct result of that we're going to see when the golf club launches?
Yeah, and I mean, that's definitely, you have to be vigilant, and you have to be sort of always sort of challenging your preconceptions about things. And I think that sort of manifests in a lot of ways. Like I was saying, the power meter. For a long time, you know, we just kind of thought, we're like, well, golf games have a power meter, and there's a pin, and you have to line up the thing. And so, you know, we went through quite a lot of iterations trying to get that whole, how the power meter was going to fill, and how, you know, how we're going to communicate the information. And then it's funny, like a bug one night in one of the builds took it out of the game. We took it home. We started playing it without the meter, and we realized, you know what? You don't need it. We don't. Mm. We've spent so much time focusing on the feel here, because that's one of the things from the beginning, we were focusing on the feel of the controls and making sure that performance mattered, and it wasn't so kind of samey across all the situations. And then we realized that actually we're really, really close here. We could do without this, and it just creates a greater level of immersion. So there's one aspect. I also mentioned that in the play-by-play commentary, our audio designer here, we were talking about it, and we were saying, well, you know, it's not really a broadcast, and we're not going to have a crowd, and it's not like, you know, emulating, you know, actual tournaments, but it's really helpful to have the voiceover there. So mm-hmm. what can we do differently? And he had this idea of like, well, maybe it can be just sort of like your buddy. It's not a caddy, but it's not a broadcaster. It's like your buddy's on the course with you, but he knows everything that's going on. So it's there to give you helpful tips, give you feedback on what you did, and to kind of surface relevant information to you. And we sort of did this, and it's a little bit more casual, and I think people kind of pick up on it, that it doesn't sound like broadcast commentary.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, the more we lived with it and the more we pushed with it, we realized there's actually all these huge advantages to it in that it does sound fresh and refreshing. We noticed that people, you know, it adds a little bit of humor to it because it's a little lighter. And secondly, because we're doing it here, we have the opportunity to create massively deep banks where we can just keep recording samples. We don't have to like book time with talent and get them in the studio and all this kind of stuff. So it definitely all opens up opportunities, I think, that people normally don't have. And there's also opportunities for community engagement and all this kind of stuff. So there's all that, you know, those sort of aspects where you're doing things that are different. And then just the general things about polishing and being creative with the resources that we have, and especially with the procedural generation, where you might be used to, if you're working on a traditional golf game, you the courses are very finely crafted.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they're preset real courses, and you're modeling them, and it's just a diorama, really, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But with the procedural generation, you don't know what you're going to get, so you have to be really creative in how you create the assets. And I think that was a challenge for people that we had to sort of, you know, really stay on top of, to say, well, how can we do this in a way that we don't know how it's going to be used in the end result? And the guys have done an amazing job, because at first we weren't sure we were going to be able to have a free cam, because we thought, oh, well, procedural generation, there might be like some parts that we don't want people going too close in.
Mm.
But then in the end, you know, they've done such an awesome job that we can have a free cam, And you can go around and look at the rocks and look at the lily pads and all this stuff, and it all looks super awesome. So, and I think that that's like sort of a direct result of having to work within those limitations. Whereas I think that, you know, if it's just, well, we're just going to have an army of guys and make a whole bunch of pre-done courses and stuff, you don't have to necessarily, you know, it's still obviously really difficult, but it's not something that we had the luxury of doing it that way. So,
you know, you use the word procedural generation. I think I might have an idea what that means, but I'm probably wrong. So could you just talk a little bit about what procedural generation actually is? And I mean, you touched on what it sort of brings to the golf club, but maybe explain that a little bit more. I'll say for our listeners, but I really mean for me.
So what procedural generation means is that essentially the computer is going to generate the course for you. So what we've developed, there's an algorithm, a largely mathematical algorithm, that takes inputs that the user gives. So I want an 18-hole course, I want lots of trees, I want a little bit of water and lots of sand traps, and I want it to be set in the mountains. So what it takes those sort of input variables, and then it crunches a whole bunch of numbers, and then out comes a course, right? And so what it means is that you don't have to hand edit the course if you don't want to. We have the ability to start from a blank slate and hand edit it if you want, but if you don't, you can just click a few buttons and the computer will generate it for you. The game will output something that's playable. And so some of that stuff is, you know, pretty technical stuff where it uses noise functions and all kinds of advanced math to, mm-hmm. to generate the terrain, mm-hmm. and to make it all realistic and to make it so it blends nicely. And then there are other things that are kind of rules based on real-world golf course design.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them are very simple. Some of them are like lining up the tee from hole one as being close to the clubhouse.
Okay.
And the green from hole 9 or 18 to be close to the clubhouse. So really simple stuff like that. And then other ones are sort of more subtle in terms of how wide do you make the fairways? What's the average length of a hole if the par is going to be this? And there's all kinds of tolerances in there that we sort of gathered those together from studying real world courses and put all that stuff together, all that intelligence in there, and really focus on that we wanted to make playable courses that are fun out of the box. Because it's one thing for it to just, you know, generate a big load of land and then slap some holes down, but if it doesn't feel like a real place, then, and the holes are like maybe not even playable,
mm-hmm.
then it's not fun, right?
Yeah.
So we spent a lot of effort making sure that what it generates are playable holes. So it's been pretty fun. So I hope that answers the question.
Oh, definitely. You mentioned social. Some people hear the word social and they run screaming because of some of the connotations that it brings. I have a feeling that's not what you're talking about. So when you talk about the ways that you can play this game, incorporating social, but like what are the basic modes of play? Like when I put this, you know, start this up day one, when I either buy it or download it, however I get it, what are the modes that are going to be available to me, and what are those social aspects?
Right. So it's definitely not, you know, sort of social in the sense where I think people think is like spammy or anything
right.
like that. But it's not like that at all. It's really what it is more of a pretty enhanced, I don't know what you call it, rich presence, like knowing that what your friends are doing at almost all times,
mm-hmm.
and driving competition between your friends. So there's
nice.
A bunch of features that we built around to support that. So one of them is what we call ghost balls.
Mm-hmm.
So no matter what, because of the way the game plays, no matter what, even if your friend is offline, you can always play against your friend's best ball. So you can be sitting there teeing off on a course, and you're never going to be alone. You can always, if you want to, you can turn it off if
mm-hmm.
you want, but you can see your friend's shots as, you know, as you take yours. And so you're essentially playing a round against them.
Mm-hmm.
You can also play against rivals. So those are people that are really closely connected to you in the leaderboards.
Okay.
They might be your friends. They might be total strangers. And
mm-hmm.
so you can turn their balls on and you can compete against them. So it sort of drives you to improve. And I think also what we've done is It's totally asynchronous now, so okay. You don't have to you don't have to say, okay, you know, we're going to start a round of golf. I'm going to wait for you to join the lobby, and then we're going to go through, and you take your turn, I'll take my turn.
Right.
You just don't have to do that anymore. You can just say, you can invite your friend and say, hey, let's play a round. I'm going to play on this course. And then I can just go in and start playing. And when my friend joins, and it's super easy for them to join, they can just look at their activity feed and be like, oh, look, you know, Pete's invited me to play a round. I can press triangle or whatever mm-hmm. to join them. Boom, I'm going to join them instantaneously, pressing a button. So I'm on the course, and then I'm teeing off, and I can look back and see you tee off on hole one, kind of thing. So it's not like we're in completely different silos. We're actually in the same world, and it's persistent. So there can actually be like hundreds of people playing on the course if you wanted to turn that many people on. So it's really pretty cool. And then there's also, of course, the user sharing and content system. So I can create a course, upload it to the server, and other people can play it, rate it, so they can say, oh, that's a really good course. I'm going to rate it, you know, 8 out of 10 or whatever. And, you can favorite courses and all that kind of stuff. So there's this sort of, it's not like a tacked on thing. It's built into the core of how you play the game.
Hmm.
And it's really, a lot about focus around playing with your friends and sharing content and competition and enabling it in a way that's not forced, that you can just do whatever you want. If I want to finish my round, go to work, I can do that. If I want to, and then you can catch up and we can see the result later. So I think there's a lot of flexibility there.
And you've talked a few times about the course creation. So let's talk about that a little more. So it's obviously a key fundamental part of the game is the ability to create courses. I would imagine there's going to be a few different types of people that play this game. There are going to be the types of people who just want to get out there and play golf, and they'll hop on a course and go. There's going to be people who want to, have always wanted to, and in probably some versions of some golf games, probably PC-based over the last couple of decades, have been able to go in and just micro-build golf courses to their heart's content, laying out the finest detail of all 18 holes. But there's probably most people are somewhere in the middle where, hey, you know, I've never created a golf course before. I don't know anything about doing that, but I want to try this out. What's going to make it fun for somebody to just hop in and be like, hey, you know what, I feel like making a course. What is it that you guys, what's the recipe you guys have cooked up that's going to make that fun?
Well, I think there's sort of a couple of aspects to that. The first is the fact that you don't have to go in and do that kind of micro editing, that you can just go in and say, I want this many holes, this many, you know, this much bunkers, this much trees. You have those sort of really high level layers. So you can do that within, I think, 4 clicks. You go through and boom, there's going to be a course created for you. There's then a second tier of things that you can tweak just with sliders, and you don't have to ever go into a 3D editing mode to edit the course. So there's like a second tier of stuff where you can really customize it. But then there's a third tier where, and this is one of the things where we weren't even sure it was going to be possible when we first started making the game, at least in a way that we could make it fun and make it accessible and make it usable on a gamepad, because that's one of the things. If you're playing it on a console, it needs to work on a controller. But lo and behold, we built a prototype, and it's sort of the very first initial one was it was waypoint based, and essentially you had 3 waypoints for each hole, and a big cursor, and you could move the tee, the green, and then there's a waypoint in the middle to make it a dog leg or whatever. And what you can do is it's super simple. You just move your cursor over it, press, X or A, and then drag it, press X or A again, done. Like, it's really, really easy, super fast. It all happens in real time. And we built that, and then suddenly we're like, okay, well, this is actually really easy, and it's very easy for us to extend this. So we went through quite a number of the most challenging thing is, how do you present all the options that people have, like terrain sculpting and placing objects and, you know, resizing bunkers and all this stuff in a way. But I think we've come up with something that's pretty usable, and it's really doesn't use a lot of buttons, doesn't really, you know, overload you with information. So it's still really focused around that central cursor and then just buttoning through options. So I think what we've come up with is something that's super easy to use on a gamepad, and but provides you that front end with the procedural generation where you don't actually have to go in and edit them if you don't want to. That's, you know, obviously there's going to be definitely a class of users who want to do that and who want to recreate their local club or do whatever, and they're going to want to use that advanced editing capability. But there's other layers there for the casual user who just like, you know, I'm bored of these courses, I want a new one, and I kind of feel like playing in the mountains. Boom, it's there. And, you know, I want to play a par 3 course. Boom, I can say, I want only par 3s. Don't, you know, and like in literally like 3 clicks, you're done.
Nice.
And it's going to be guaranteed to be playable. And we've made the like sharing so invisible. It's not like it's hard to share it. It's like one click. It's like, do you want to publish this? Yes. Boom, it's on the server. It takes like less than it's seconds to upload to the server. It's such a tiny amount of data because we don't send the whole course. We just send like we're calling it the DNA of the course, the kind of just the instructions for how to build it. And so it makes sharing super easy. When you go to the course select menu, it's invisible to you whether you're looking at local courses or online courses. So from day one, people are going to boot the game up and have potentially thousands of courses to pick from.
And how will those courses be curated? Because, you know, one of my thoughts when reading about this is like, well, if there's thousands upon thousands of courses, and I would imagine over the course of from launch through, you know, the first few months, there will be many that will be not only created by the community, but also I would imagine released by HP Studios. How is that going to be curated? How is it going to be? How am I going to sort of sift through the potential morass, so to speak, of courses and find, you know, what the best ones are?
Well, we do have like a user rating function, right? So people can rate the courses. So if I played a course, I'm like, that was awesome, I'm going to rate it, you know, a high star value or number value out of 10. And so you have the ability to sort by that. So there's all kinds of sorting and sort of search criteria that we've built into the game. We also have the ability to feature courses. So things that are interesting can be curated and bubbled to the top. You can favorite courses. You can show courses just by particular authors. You can show me only my friends' courses. So there's all kinds of filters to allow. And we thought, again, that was one of the key things for us was discovery. You don't want to boot up and see a list of 1,000 courses. So right. You don't see a list in the game. The first thing you do is you pop up and you see essentially a series of tiles that are curated courses. It's like, here's course of the week. Here's the most played course over the last week. Here's your friend's most played course. Here's the most recent course that your friends played. Okay. Here's your favorite course. Here's, et cetera. Here's the highest rated course. So you have a sort of a window of selected content when you go into the game. And then you can click more and get into that more detailed filtering mode. And over time, what we're sort of planning is that besides just the curated content, the community curated content will, you know, sift out the best courses for people to be able to find. So I think that's one of the more exciting parts of the game.
You mentioned mountains, for example. What are some of the different environments that we're going to see in these different golf courses?
So right now we have in the game, there's 5. They're done to varying degrees. So we have sort of what we call like a rural course, which is sort of like rolling English countryside. There's an alpine course, which is obviously mountains.
Nice.
There's a desert course, so you can play in the desert.
Mm-hmm.
We have the autumn-themed one, which is kind of like a northeast autumn. And then we have what's called the lynx theme, which is sort of a coastal. But there are other ones that we're, you know, looking at adding post-launch kind of thing. But those are the ones that we're looking at currently in the game.
So one of the things that, again, sort of surprised me, and because of expectations, right, in the way that we play not only golf games, but just, you know, major sports games in the past, is that there is not a sort of a single-player career mode where I can create a player and build up his attributes and pick and choose my gear. This is very much focused as a, everybody has the same attributes. Everybody's sort of on a level playing field. What was, I'm sure there were plenty of spirited debates about this, but ultimately what was the, you know, what are the factors behind deciding to go in one direction versus the other as far as a, you know, the issuing a traditional single player career mode?
So, well, I think it definitely was a spirited debate here, and we had a lot of discussions about it. And it's definitely something that long term we do want to add to the game, the idea of attribute building and a sort of a more fleshed out career portion. But it wasn't something that we felt sat really inside the core pillars of the game, and also something that we didn't necessarily feel we could do justice in a version 1.0.
Okay.
When we were trying to build the game from nothing, we really needed to focus on the core gameplay mechanics. But also because the game is very social, very much focused around multiplayer competition, and very much also surrounding user generated content, it's a lot of the sort of typical career mode things start to break down. So let me just talk about a couple of those that break down. One is, if you're playing on user generated content and there's a lot of multiplayer content online, then in terms of like a level playing field, we wanted it to be fair for everybody, and a lot of our gameplay is focused on user performance. So we didn't want you to be able to just like grind your way to max attributes and then be able to, you know, blow your friend away because he hasn't spent 30 hours grinding to get max attributes kind of thing. You know, it should be, if you're better at golf, you can beat your friend kind of thing. And it's not really based around invisible fudge factors that are, you know, that are making you hit the ball better kind of thing. It should be sort of more even playing field. So that was important. The second thing is that, you know, the idea of how do you structure a career mode that traditionally is based around, you know, a set cycle schedule of tours and tournaments and that kind of thing, whereas we don't have that, right? We don't have a set cycle. It's all user-created tournaments, user-created tours, and so user-created courses. So everybody's experience would be very, very different, and so that sort of also put it, you know, a kind of challenge is, how do you structure a career mode? What does it even mean to have a career mode in a game like this? And then sort of the third element was AI players, where, you know, we talked about having sort of a roster of AI players that you would play against, and they'd have personalities and this kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But what we found is that as soon as we put Ghost Balls in, nobody started, we had AI players in the game. We have AI players, but as soon as we put Ghost Balls in, nobody was playing against the AI anymore. Like, the data just showed that nobody in the studio here ever picked to play against an AI as soon as we had Ghost Balls. So we started to think, we're like, well, if we're not doing it, is anybody else going to play against? Like, and if we have, you know, limited resources, limited time, should we be expending at this point time, you know, looking at AI players and single player career and all that kind of stuff? So it's definitely something that's on our radar. You know, we all are gamers and, you know, sort of hardcore sports gamers. We're all playing these games. We want modes like that, but we also want to do it right, and we want to do it in a way that suits this game and that also evolves with the way that the community actually engages with the game. So we might find something out when the game launches that, wow, people play this game completely different than we imagined, and that allows us to shape that feature to work better with what people actually want, rather than us sort of taking a stab at it and putting it out there and maybe nobody playing it. Because they're really, career modes are really pretty labor intensive modes to build. So we wanted to make sure we did it right. So we felt it was better just focus on the core of what the game is and to address that as an update mode.
And another one of the major challenges that sports games have traditionally had when not having major licenses or even partial licenses is exactly that. So the golf club, I believe, does not have licenses for any real-world courses. It does not have the licenses for real-world gear, like, you know, whether it's, you know, clothes or shoes or clubs. It does not have any real-world licenses for players, and I guess I should say yet. Do you view that as a challenge or an opportunity or probably both?
I think that in some ways we definitely see it as an opportunity. You know, we've worked on countless licensed titles, and people definitely, you know, it adds a lot of authenticity to the game. But at the same time, there are a lot of, I think, especially things that people don't, you know, don't see behind the scenes. There's a lot of restrictions that are involved. So for us, it was like it's a big opportunity to do things that are, you know, maybe aren't possible when you're using a license, and it sort of forces us to think differently. I think especially in golf, it's not as people tend to play as themselves or mm-hmm. want to play as themselves, mm-hmm. and there's not a team aspect yep. the same way. So it's for golf, it's almost like the best fit for
right.
a licensed title because
I agree.
It's a more natural fit there.
So, pricing. I don't know if you've announced how much the game is going to cost. What's your model? I mean, is it basically I'm going to pay X amount of dollars and I'm going to have full access? Is this going to be a microtransaction-based economy? Is this going to be a service, like a subscription service? I don't know if you've talked about it or prepared to talk about it, but high level, what's your business model plan for the golf club?
So, you know, there's not been anything announced in terms of price point. We're still working that out. Again, that has a lot of sort of moving parts behind the scenes
sure,
about
sure.
how it gets distributed. But in a nutshell, it right now we're looking at it's a sort of pay upfront kind of title, sort of, you know, the traditional I'm going to pay X amount of dollars,
okay.
download the game, and I get the game. But rather than, though, an annualized franchise where you have to buy number two and number three, you mm-hmm. know, year on year, we're looking at supporting this ongoing mm. and running it as a continual franchise. I mean, that's another thing that as sports gamers we really want is the sort of more continuity in your franchise. And so we will be pushing, you know, updates down the line. Some of them will be free. Some of them, depending on the size of them, might be a paid update.
It Got it.
Kind of depends. It could be, there could be things like as simple as, say, item packs for the mm-hmm. course creator. So mm-hmm. there's, you know, additional types of stuff that people want to see in the course creator. So we create new items, put them up there, and then you can download those as an update. Could be entire modes, like we were just talking about the career mode. That could be an entire mode that you would add into the game after the fact. And so we're really looking at this as an ongoing thing that we're going to continually support, because that's another thing that the new consoles and PC allow us to do is to treat the game in a different way. It's not a fire and forget thing. We're not done, ship it, okay, well now we're on to the next thing. We're, you know, we're going to have a team working on this constantly. You know, they'll hit ship and then just keep on working. So it's a very different scenario than it was, you know, even a couple of years ago.
Well, you can't see me doing this right now, but I am raising my arms and doing backflips because I have been both predicting and begging for sports as a service where it's exactly what you say, not having to pay $60 every single year. I would much rather have the opportunity to pay a subscription, whether it be monthly or yearly or whatever, to upgrade so that over the course, I don't have to wait another year for a new feature to be added, or I don't have to wait another year for a, you know, batch of historical, you know, scenarios to be added or whatever it is. And I'm not just talking golf, I'm talking anything. So it sounds as if from the console, at least from the console perspective, you are going to be the first true, potentially at least the first true sports game as a service, maybe not on day one, but moving forward. Is that a fair statement to make?
I think so. You know, I think that exactly how that service will evolve is you know, still to be determined. We'll have to see how its uptake is and all this kind of stuff. But, you know, so it might, when on day one, it might kind of feel like a traditional title where, you know, you pay your X amount of dollars to download it and you've got your game. But then as it evolves, you know, that's when you'll see when a year down the road, you've had X number of updates that have come into the game. And people are continually doing it, and we're continually pushing updates, potentially free ones, as well as, you know, a mix. We don't really know. It's part of it's going to be a collaboration with the community, right? That depending on how they play the game and what they're sort of telling us that we really want feature X, then that's going to help direct our development as well. So I think there's a lot of, you know, obvious examples out there right now where how games are moving towards that model. And especially, I think, where the sort of whole mobile explosion has changed the way people even interact with their games. People just expect the games to be continuously updated now. So there's like, there's been kind of a change, and consoles just sort of catching up with that now, whereas that's been sort of the reality on PC and mobile for a couple of years now.
And, you know, as we've talked about on our show many times, the nature, and you even mentioned it, the nature of annual sports license requirements and restrictions have prevented from doing it, whereas if you have no licenses, you can kind of do whatever you want to. And this is another great example of that. You know, I can hear the excitement in your voice. Like, you are obviously very invested and very excited to unleash this game upon the public. Sort of, you know, as we wrap, what is your, you know, what is your hope for what people will experience when they first start playing the golf club? Like, you know, what are you hoping that some of the, beyond the, wow, this is amazing, you know, but what are you hoping that people get out of it when they first start playing the golf club?
Well, I think that I hope people sort of get that feeling of limitlessness that we got when we first started booting it up and we started playing it as a game. There's been a number of moments through the development that were kind of wow moments when we boot it up, the course creator being one. The first time you go in there, you can click a few buttons and you're playing on a completely new course that nobody's ever seen before. And not only that, it's completely playable. Like, it seems like a real place. That's where you start to be like, wow, this is really cool. This is very different than anything I've played before. Because one of the things we've talked about is, you know, no loading times, which might seem like a kind of a boring talking point. But it's it's really, really cool. Especially the first time you play and you finish your, you know, you sink your putt. And then you press X, and you're instantly on the tee on the next hole. Like, you don't have to wait at all. There's literally zero.
If that's boring to people, it sure as heck ain't boring to me. I can tell you that right now.
And I think that some of the other things are, again, that sort of sense of place on the courses where they have great atmosphere, they seem real. And what I was sort of alluding to earlier, where I'm on hole three, I kind of turn around, and I can see my friend in the distance join and tee off on hole one, and I'm like, this is a real place. Like, nice. It's got people there, and it's really exciting when you see that, and it's really something where you're like, this is different. This is something special. It's something new that I haven't played before, and so that's, I hope that what people get is that they understand that this is something new, because that's what it feels like to us.
Love it. Peter Garson, the executive producer of The Golf Club, coming this spring. I believe there's not an official launch date. Am I correct?
Yeah, not yet. There's still, like I said, there's still a few things to work out to get an exact, so we can pin down, you know, it's coming on day this.
Right.
But we're still on target for the spring. And so we're like super excited to get in people's hands and to get people playing it.
Beautiful. So yes, Peter Garson, the executive producer of The Golf Club, from HB Studios, coming this spring to your PlayStation 4, your Xbox One, and your PC. Mr. Garson, thank you so much for joining us. How about we have you come back on when the game launches so we can talk some more about it? Does that sound like a plan?
Sounds like a plan, absolutely.
Beautiful. Well, thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us today. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Well, thanks for listening to this episode of the Press Row Podcast, brought to you by Operation Sports. I'm your host, Richard Grisham. There are several ways to make sure you never miss an episode. Subscribe to it on iTunes, subscribe to it on Stitcher Radio, look for it on your favorite podcast app, follow the show on Twitter at Press for Podcast, or just read Operation Sports every day. No matter which way you get it, please rate and review it and comment on it while you're there too. That helps us keep the show going. And make sure you follow each of our panelists on Twitter. They are as follow: Operation Sports, Chris Sanner at Chris_SNR, Kotaku's Own Good at Owen Good, Polygon Sumitsarkar at Sumitsarkar, Operation Sports Steve Noah at Steve_OS, Pasta Padres Brian Weedye at Pasta Padre, and me, your host, Richard Grisham at Rich Grisham, and of course, Operation Sports at Operation Sports. As always, it's a thrill to bring the Press Row Podcast to life every time we can, and we couldn't do it without the great people at Operation Sports or you, our listeners. Thanks, and we'll see you again really soon.